From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Opening day today for hearings on a Bush nomination that has become a lightning rod for Democratic criticism and a potent illustration of the conflicting views of the Bush administration and the minority party on global institutions. In his opening statements before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning, John Bolton, Bush's nominee for U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, made no bones about his belief that the U.N. and its members needed to shape up.
Scandals such as those we have witnessed with the Oil for Food program undermine not only America's confidence in the United Nations, but the confidence of the international community as well. They must not recur. And we must never lose sight of the reality that ultimately it is member governments that must take responsibility for the UN's actions, whether they be successes or failures.
Democrats pointed out that the record of Mr. Bolton's long-time damning opinion of the UN itself was clear, and that that view was one of the primary reasons they oppose his nomination. Senator Barbara Boxer of California laid it out this way.
I have spent the last month extensively reviewing your writings, your public statements about the United Nations. And my overall assessment, Mr. Bolton, is that you have nothing but disdain for the United Nations.
Democrats, with some Republican assistance, hammered at Bolton's past statements, but also expressed concern over accusations that he's shown a pattern of freezing out those who disagreed with his positions on intelligence issues while at the State Department. It seems clear that, if appointed, Bolton will shake things up at the UN. The question is whether he'll be a reformer or a wrecking ball. Tonight on Point, the president's nomination of John Bolton as U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations and the Senate hearings this week over his controversial past and future. We begin tonight in Washington, where senators aggressively questioned John Bolton today. Joining me now from Capitol Hill is Charles Babington, congressional reporter for The Washington Post. Charles Babington, thanks for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
Can you give us a sense of the contours of today's hearing? Where did people jump in? What form did this take?
Well, it was your standard committee hearing with the very familiar, you know, look of the Democrats on one side and Republicans on the other, and there's no question that the Democrats were very tough on him. And the Republicans mostly, you know, came to his defense somewhat, but mostly let Bolton fend for himself. But as you noted, Boxer was one of the more aggressive ones, one of the most interesting moments when she actually showed a 3-minute video clip of a speech that he made about 10 years ago in which he was very critical of the UN. So it was that type of atmosphere where the Democrats hit hard throughout the day.
But Charles, let's hear Barbara Boxer talking today with John Bolton, going at him on comments that he made before the World Federalist Association in 1994. The tenor of this is behind much of today's hearings. Listen with me, if you will.
The Secretariat building in New York has 38 stories. If you lost 10 stories, it wouldn't make a bit of difference. You said there is no United Nations. If we were redoing the Security Council, I'd have one permanent member because that's the real reflection of the distribution of power in the world. Now, do you disagree now? Do you disagree with the statements that you made?
Well, the tape that you just showed and some of those statements come from a panel discussion, I think it was in 1994, before the World Federalists. The World Federalists believe in world government, and I do not.
I'm not interested in them. I'm interested in you.
I was talking to that audience at the time, so that's what I'm trying to explain.
Well, you don't say different things to different audiences.
No, I don't. Many of the World Federalists believe is that the UN is the nascent world government coming into being, and I don't agree with that either. So what I was trying to do to that audience of World Federalists was get their attention, and the comment about the 10 stories was a way of saying there's not a bureaucracy in the world that can't be made leaner and more efficient. I was
trying
to get their
attention. Well, that isn't what you said. You said it wouldn't be missed. So we can look at, you know, what wouldn't be missed. Talk to us about
that. I think
that.
A reduction in personnel is something that every manager and every government organization, every international organization should strive for, and that was the metaphor I was trying to come up with, as I say, to get their attention. The question about, you cut off the middle of my presentation in your showing of the tape.
Well, I ask unanimous consent to put the entire statement in the
record. I appreciate that. The concept that I was addressing there is the problem of false concreteness, where many people say, well, the UN did this or the UN did that. The UN failed here or the UN succeeded here. And in In the vast majority of cases, it's not a question of the UN, qua UN, succeeding or failing. It's a question of whether the member governments of the United Nations have made the correct decision. And that problem of false concreteness is something that I think is a very real problem.
Mr. Bolton, I don't mean to cut you off, but you're getting away from the point. I read everything in here. You didn't talk about there being you need to fire certain people. You say the point I want to leave with you in this very brief presentation is where I started. There is no United Nations. There is an international community that occasionally can be led by the only real power left in the world, and that's the United States, when it suits our interests and when we can get others to go along.
California Senator Barbara Boxer going back and forth there today with President Bush's nominee for U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., John Bolton. Charles Babington with the Washington Post, you're good to listen to that again with us. We know you've heard it. Many of us have not. We see Charles Bolton there in diplomatic form, someone who's known to be very blunt. Did he keep that kind of cool throughout the hearings today?
He did keep his cool the whole time. I thought that segment that you played was probably the most interesting part of the hearing, and the Democrats did not seem to be terribly impressed with his argument that what he was doing was trying to get the attention of that audience 11 years ago. But at the same time, Tom, I think one thing that Bolton knows is that he's probably got the votes. As you know, the Republicans control the committee, as they do the full Senate, and the only Republican who there's been talk of might vote against him is Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And Chafee met with reporters during the lunch break and said, "I'm still inclined to vote for him." Bolton knows that, and I think as the day went on, you saw him look more relaxed and more sort of an attitude of, you know, all I've got to do is get through the day and I'll be all right.
And in a sense, singing for an audience of one, Senator Chafee.
Well, yes, or maybe, you know, like the basketball team that's way ahead, it's just don't goof up, you know. You sit on your lead with sort of, and he's not, I mean, you see lots of nominees do this sort of thing where they have the votes. They just are very circumscribed in their answers, try not to make a big gaffe, and they don't really have to be terribly forthcoming in their answers. All they have to do is not mess up.
Charles Babington, how is this 1994 speech being interpreted in Washington? These are very bald statements. We heard John Bolton there saying he's trying to point out the false concreteness of the United Nations. So what is it? Is this a man who believes that it's just a kind of a will-o'-the-wisp up there on Turtle Bay in New York, or that it's something that matters, or something in between?
I think there's a lot of confusion about that. The quotes from that rather fiery speech have been used a lot against him, cited quite often. And what you heard today, including from Boxer and a few others, is Democrats saying, "I don't even understand why you want this job. You seem to have disdain for this agency. Why in the world would you want to head it up?" But his response, Bolton's response to that was, "Look, the UN, the purpose of it is good. It's important. We can try to clean it up, reform it in some ways, and with a lot of U.S. leadership, it can still be a good agency." But I think your point is well made. There is some confusion about why somebody who criticizes it so strongly now wants to be the head of it.
What about on the other side of the ledger, I guess we might call it the integrity side when it comes to intelligence, the allegations that John Bolton bullied, threatened, punished analysts in the intelligence community who disagreed with his take on intelligence? Does it look like that's going to stick? What more are we going to hear on that front?
Well, you heard a lot about it today. There was quite a bit of this, and it goes to an episode a couple of years ago where he was going to give a speech about purported bioweapons capability by Cuba. Someone in the State Department said, "No, you really can't say that because it's not proven," and he got angry at that person. And then the question is, did he try to have that person fired? Bolton says he was only angry because he thinks the person went behind his back. The Democrats said, "No, you got angry because he disagreed with the assessment that you wanted to put out there." The Democrats hit that really long and hard over and over and over. But again, I don't think it won any Republican vote. So again, it's sort of the Democrats can say what they want. As long as he can tough it out through the day, you know, he'll probably be all right.
In a couple more days, Charles, what is the expectation of what John Bolton's mission would be at the United Nations? He, interpret it any way you like, he's been a fiery critic. So what does President Bush, what would President Bush want him to do up there?
Well, obviously I can't read the president's mind, but it's hard to miss a signal that because Bolton is such and has been such a prominent critic of the UN, it's impossible to miss a signal that by tapping him to head it up, that the president wants to, administration wants to express the displeasure over certain things. Certainly, the oil for food scandal would be one. But I think it's a broader concern that a number of conservatives have about the role that an international organization might play, and they want to assert, you know, the United States dominance really as the only really superpower in the world. Right.
So
now.
Bolton as reformer at the United Nations or wrecking ball?
I guess stay tuned is the only answer, Tom.
You say the vote's pretty much in the can, so he'll hunker down and get through these next days. More allegations coming from analysts at the State Department.
There will be some State Department employees on the witness stand tomorrow. It's unclear whether Bolton will have to come back or not. I think these people tomorrow will be talking about the thing we were just mentioning a minute ago about the Cuba speech. I'm not saying that no votes can be changed, and Chafee has said, you know, I'm not ironclad, but he has said it will take something pretty extraordinary for me to vote against him, and I don't think Republicans foresee something that extraordinary happening.
Charles Babington, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Charles Babington, congressional reporter for The Washington Post. He spoke with me from Capitol Hill. We are talking tonight about the president's nomination of John Bolton as U.S. ambassador to the U.N. and the Senate hearings this week over his controversial past and future. You can join the conversation. Are you for or against a U.N. ambassador that says there is no United Nations? Would an Ambassador Bolton shake up the U.N. or blow it up? And how do you interpret President Bush nominating such a furious critic of the U.N. to go to the U.N.? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the nomination of John Bolton as U.S. ambassador to the U.N. and Senate hearings this week over his controversial past and future. You can join the conversation tonight. How do you interpret President Bush picking such a furious critic of the U.N. to go to the U.N.? And would the United States be better off if the U.N. vanished or was radically reined in with the world? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Talk to dive into this with us tonight. We are very happy to have with us from Sandwich, New Hampshire tonight, Joseph Nye, professor of international relations and former dean at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He's author of The Power Game, a Washington novel most recently, and Soft Power, The Means to Success in World Politics. Joe Nye, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Glad to be with you.
And with us from New York, John Fund, columnist for The Wall Street Journal's OpinionJournal.com. John Fund, good to have you with us again as well.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Let's go back to the touchstone of so much of today's hearings just for a moment first, if you two will humor me here, and listen to a couple of excerpts from that 1994 remarks of John Bolton before the World Federalist Association.
There is no United Nations. There is an international community that occasionally can be led by the only real power left in the world, and that's the United States, when it suits our interests, and when we can get others to go along. The United States makes the UN work when it wants it to work. And that is exactly the way it should be, because the only question for the United States is what's in our national interest. And if you don't like that, I'm sorry, but that is the fact.
John Bolton, in 1994, before the World Federalist Association, he was diplomatic in tone today, but he had a note of fury in his voice then. John Fund, how do you interpret the message then and its relevance now?
John Bolton is a man of, shall we say, very blunt views. He was expressing them as a private citizen. I can assure you that if you want to go back to previous U.N. ambassadors, Daniel Patrick Moynihan and Jean Kirkpatrick, to name two, they said things almost equally as strong in their capacity as a private citizen before they became U.N. ambassador. When they became U.N. ambassador, they did two things. One is they recognized the symbolic and governmental importance of their role, and they worked within the framework of the United Nations. And two, they, of course, followed administration policy, as they were obliged to do. So John Bolton comes to the U.N. with a keen eye for its frailties and its shortcomings, And frankly, with Daniel Patrick Moynihan and Jean Kirkpatrick, that proved to be a plus, not a negative.
Joseph Nye, everybody thinks the UN has its frailties, so why gang up on John Bolton for bluntly saying so?
Well, I think the question about Bolton is not the substance of what he said in that particular talk. It's the style. He likes to stick his finger in people's eyes. In other words, he likes to antagonize. In that sense, Bolton, it's not just at the UN. For example, people who described him, like reporters described his performance at a conference with European allies in 2003, said he unnecessarily enjoyed insulting our allies. That's not effective diplomacy. Now, he may learn to tone that down. He might even turn out to be, like Nixon going to China, an effective agent for reform in the UN. But he's not a man who understands much about what I call soft power, the ability to get what you want through attraction. And he does very strongly like to put forward views. Sometimes he almost enjoys antagonizing people rather than attracting them.
Jut that jaw and go for it. John Fund, we'll talk about that. But I want to ask you first, you say that if he's nominated, and it appears that he will be, that he'll be a good soldier, he'll carry out the administration's view, he'll play the role that needs to be played in Washington. But we'd like to understand the worldview that even as a private citizen that he carries, and as both of you are saying, it doesn't really come across very clearly from these clips from the World Federalist Association meeting. How would you describe John Bolton's honest view of the UN, its potential, and its, I don't know, does he think it's a fiction?
Well, we know what his view was in 1994. That was 11 years ago. I can tell you from conversations I've had with him and from conversations I've had with other State Department people where he served the last 4 years, that he has a more nuanced, understanding role of it. Having said that, look, I agree with Professor Nye. Lots of diplomacy is very important, but you know, not all diplomats have to be cut from the same striped set of cloth. And I have to tell you, if you look at what John Bolton has actually accomplished at the State Department, as opposed to the boogeyman image that is being created of him, this is a man who stitched together a proliferation agreement to limit the spread of nuclear weapons, got 10 or 12 major countries on board. He received many kudos from many people in the diplomatic community and other nations, as well as our State Department, for his role in doing that. Sometimes diplomats have to be polite. Sometimes they have to be aggressive. Sometimes diplomats have to speak bluntly. Sometimes they have to speak in a veiled way. John Bolton, I think, has learned a lot in the last 4 years of the State Department, and look at the results of his work. It speaks for itself.
Joe Nye, how would you sum up the results of John Bolton's work in government?
Well, I think it's a more mixed record. I think on the Proliferation Security Initiative, which is an agreement among a number of countries to stop ships at sea if they're believed to hold nuclear contraband and so forth, I think that's a plus. But if you look at his behavior on trying to work on the six-power talks on North Korea, most accounts argue that he's the man who lost us 2 years' time, during which time the North Koreans went ahead with reprocessing of their spent fuel and increasing the number of nuclear weapons. He was never in Colin Powell's inner circle, and he was often working at cross purposes from what Powell was trying to do. So it's a mixed record in the State Department.
And what about, I put it to John Fund, but let me put it to you as well. Within this rhetoric that he used in 1994 and has used elements of more recently, we're certainly prepared to learn, to believe everybody learns in office and may gain nuance. But what is the worldview that you think John Bolton carries, Joe Nye? How does he see the UN? Does he see it as a fiction, as a charade? How would you describe it?
Well, I think that to give Bolton his due, if underneath the desire to provoke, which he himself discussed in his explanation of why he addressed the World Federalists that way, the UN is not a world government. It is a arena for diplomatic action, a useful arena, one of many arenas, and it does depend a great deal upon what major states, particularly the United States, does within it. So in that sense, I think Bolton is not far off base in terms of his understanding of what the limits of the UN are. If you take something like the oil for food program in Iraq, everybody's been blaming that on Kofi Annan. It's worth remembering that it was the member governments in the Security Council that put that together and that actually vetted it. So we sometimes think that the bureaucracy of the UN is the UN. In fact, it's the member states, and Bolton is basically correct on that. But then the question is, how do you get those member states to cooperate? And you don't always do it by insulting them.
And does it make the UN more or less effective to have the U.S. ambassador boldly saying, we're the big superpower in this shop, get in line, behind us?
Well, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, who was certainly a good, strong American nationalist, had a phrase which is, if you have a big stick, talk softly. Bolton doesn't seem to understand Teddy Roosevelt.
John Fund, what's the message that you think John Bolton, within this role, and again, taking your point that he'll be a good soldier, you say, but what's the message about the way the world works that you see him wanting to get across through the UN to the rest of the world?
Well, we have had discussions for the last 20 years about the need for UN reform. And frankly, lots of former UN bureaucrats, you know, after they leave office, will tell you candidly the place is in need of a good house cleaning. And, you know, it's an ossified bureaucracy. We had the Thornburg Report, which was about 15 years ago, on the need for the UN to improve across the board. Only a small portion of that was implemented. We have the Oil for Food Program, and I agree with Professor Nye that certainly the member governments have a large share of the blame, but ultimately it was the UN bureaucracy that was the steward for the program. They had the obligations. They had the, shall I say, the fiduciary responsibility, and they failed dramatically. So given all of that, I think the United States is sending a message as follows. We pay between 20 and 25% of the bills. Of lately, we've even been catching up on our back payments. We have the United States as the host country. We need, because the reform has come so sporadically and so slowly, we need to kick that into gear. We need to have some real impetus for reform, because in order to save the United Nations, we frankly need tough love. In order to have tough love, we need someone like John Bolton.
Tough love, Joe Nye, is that the rest? Is that what it takes to push the UN, blast it toward reform?
It's true that if Bolton goes in there and is constructive, and I mean, being critical is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think the John Fund's point about Moynihan and Kirkpatrick is correct, that sometimes they were critical and they were able to make some changes. If Bolton is critical within a larger framework of being constructive, who knows? He may do some good. That's my point earlier about the Nixon and China phenomena. On the other hand, his temperament is not one which has indicated a particular interest in constructive approaches. And I think, frankly, the bigger issue is going to be this question of whether he is a man who can tolerate different views, and whether he did try to politicize intelligence. If that, I think, frankly, if it's merely the question of his Federalist speech of 94, I think it's clearly be confirmed. I think the interesting question will be, is there something in the temperament of this man that he wants to dominate, wants his own way, and if people come up with statements saying the evidence doesn't support it, he tries to remove them.
There was a lot of attention on that front today from a number of senators. Let's listen just a little bit from the hearings. Here, Democrat Joe Biden of Delaware, of course, lays out the accusation that John Bolton may have pushed for the reassignment of intelligence officers whose assessment of the facts contradicted with policies that Bolton supported.
There is a, stated just bluntly, Mr. Bolton, a concern that your ideological predisposition relating to some of these issues is one that has clouded your judgment. That's what we're talking about here, and that's what we're investigating. And this is what we know from interviews thus far. We know that in, when I say we know, we believe, based on interviews that are conducted so far, that in February of 2002, Mr. Bolton summoned a line analyst from the Bureau of Intelligence and Research into his office. And according to this analyst, Mr. Bolton got quite angry and red in the face. Mr. Bolton berated him for allegedly taking action to rewrite language for a speech he wanted to give that had been transmitted to the CIA for clearance by the intelligence community. Then, as alleged, Mr. Bolton threw him out of his office and summoned his boss, the acting assistant secretary. We know that Mr. Bolton, that it is stated to us that Mr. Bolton then asked the assistant secretary, Mr. Finger, to remove the analyst from his position. We know that some days later, when he returned from being out of office, for Mr. Bolton asked the assistant secretary, Carl Ford, who's Finger's boss, to remove the analyst from his position. We know that several months later, Mr. Bolton once again asked the new office director in the Bureau of Intelligence and Research at the State Department to remove the analyst from his position. We know from the interviews that sometime in the summer of 2002, Mr. Bolton got into his automobile and drove out to CIA headquarters. He had an appointment with Stuart Cohen, then the acting chairman of the National Intelligence Council. We know from Mr. Cohen that Mr. Bolton asked him to remove the National Intelligence Officer for Latin America from his position. The dispute here is whether Mr. Bolton was asked by Mr. Cohen. No, I won't get into that now. We know this much. Mr. Bolton deserves an opportunity to be heard in these matters, and we have a responsibility to review them. As I said earlier, the idea that government officials might be suppressed from dissenting views in intelligence matters is a very, very serious matter in these days.
Democratic Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware laying out the bill of particulars today, that alleging that John Bolton refused to hear unwelcome views or went after people who brought them to him in the intelligence community. John Fund, what about this accusation of ideology running roughshod over honest intelligence analysis, and that this is the wrong temperament for a U.N. ambassador?
Well, I think what you've just been describing is something that has happened through the course of several administrations over 50 years. I can give you chapter and verse, going back to John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and Richard Nixon, who all did those kind of stunts.
But the whole country is very allergic right now because we went to war in Iraq and the WMD weren't there.
Let me finish. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there is nothing that indicates that the dispute between Mr. Bolton and that intelligence analyst was had anything to do with WMD, had anything to do with the stuff that they got wrong.
Well, it was alleged biological weapons or factories in Cuba. That's a kind of WMD, not Iraq's.
I understand that. Mm-hmm. But just remember this. The administration was wrong about WMD. French were wrong about WMD. The British were wrong about WMD. Everyone was wrong about WMD. The intelligence community of the United States government has been wrong about so many things, including the size of the Soviet economy by a factor of 15, that anyone who enters the administration from either party would do well to be skeptical about their track record and the fact that they keep getting things wrong. Now, should Mr. Bolton have reacted quite the way that he did? Well, I don't think so. And I certainly would agree that in that instance, a certain amount of deference would have been required. However, the intelligence community are not the guys in the white hats here, and the administration officials are not the guys in the black hats. With the track record of our intelligence, anyone who is smart and has the interests of this country at heart would be highly skeptical about what comes across his desk from them.
Joseph Nye, John Bolton, not the guy in the black hat here. What do you think? If this bill of particulars is true, and of course, I should say again that John Bolton denies it. He says that is false. I never tried to do that. Intelligence analysts should give their honest assessments, his comments today. But if it were true, is this a disqualifying temperament or set of instincts here?
Well, let's make sure we have the proviso that if true, because we'll wait and see more about the facts tomorrow. But if true, then I think it does disqualify him. The idea that intelligence can sometimes be wrong is quite clear, but the right response to that is not to berate intelligence analysts who try to speak truth to power, even if they don't get the truth entirely right. It's not to exercise power to twist the facts to one preferred view rather than another. It's to try to get a more detailed assessment, to press for more views on the thing, to get a broad intelligence community-wide assessment, bringing in other agencies, other analysts. But it strikes me that if what Senator Biden described is true, and again, we don't know that yet, that does, I think, disqualify him.
John Fund, I know...
Honest government.
Excuse me, Joe. John, I know we've just got you for another minute here. If John Bolton could recreate the UN in his ideal image, what would it look like? Would it be much smaller, sidelined? Would it matter?
Well, we would look first at what the United Nations can do effectively and has done effectively. There are a lot of UN programs that do work well, programs with UNICEF, programs with public health, a whole range of things where cooperation among the member nations is, frankly, a lot easier because it doesn't involve fundamental clashes of ideology or values. So those would be not only retained, but I'm sure they would be enhanced. The Security Council obviously has to be redesigned. I don't think anyone believes that the power arrangements that were extant in 1945 need to be carried on in perpetuity. Clearly, the Security Council would work better if if it had a different structure that more reflected the way the world is now rather than in 1945. Moving on from that, clearly, the bureaucracy at the United Nations, even with a program that frankly was fairly simple to monitor and enforce, like the Oil for Food program, has proved a dismal failure. I can assure you, having talked with some of the investigators, we are going to hear an awful lot more about this program's failures. So from the first word go, I would say, you know, term limits are a great thing. In many aspects of our life, we have term limits for most of the nation's governors. We have term limits for many corporate executives.
And you'd put them on whom?
Well, I would put them on the entire United Nations bureaucracy, to be honest.
John Fun, I know we have to let you go there. We're coming to a break. Thanks very much for being with us tonight. Good to have your voice. John Fun with the Wall Street Journal's OpinionJournal.com. Joe and I, please stick with us, listeners. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the nomination of John Bolton as U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations in Senate hearings this week over his controversial past and future. We're joined tonight by Joseph Nye, Professor of International Relations and former Dean at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He's author of Soft Power, The Means to Success in World Politics, and more recently, The Power Game, a Washington novel. He served at the State Department, the Department of Defense, at the National Security Council. You can join the conversation tonight. Would Ambassador John Bolton shake up the U.N.? Or blow it up? If senators believe John Bolton cherry-picked intelligence or pushed it to reflect his goals, how serious is that to you? And what's the message to the world in the Bolton nomination? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jonah, if you'd be good enough, I'd like to listen to just one more bit from the hearings today. Here is Connecticut Democrat Christopher Dodd explaining why Democrats were spending so much of the afternoon exploring the question of whether or not Bolton sought the reassignment of intelligence officers who disagreed with him.
I frankly kind of agree with a lot of your statements about the United Nations, candidly. I think you've been on the mark in many of them. I might disagree with some of the rhetoric you've used, but I don't have a substantive problem with that. My problem is this. We're suffering terribly. We're going to send to the UN. We sent the Secretary of State to the United Nations to make a case for the presence of weapons of mass destruction. It was wrong. Terrible information. We were damaged terribly by that. And if this is true, that you tried to remove an analyst because you disagreed with their conclusions about this, that is going to hurt us further at the United. That's my concern.
And if I could just say, I have never done anything in connection with any analyst views. Nothing.
A table-pounding Democratic Senator Christopher Dodd there with John Bolton today. Joseph Knight, John Fund was saying earlier, any intelligent person who comes to Washington and perceives the manifest weaknesses of the intelligence community there would be prepared to push back hard. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, the intelligence often gets things wrong. It also often gets things right. For example, right now everybody's focused on the Iraq mistakes and mess. But it's also worth remembering that they found out about the proliferation export network of AQ Khan in Pakistan and helped to wrap that up. Mm. They got on top of the Libya nuclear program and so forth. So they get some things right and some things wrong. But the way to improve intelligence is not to berate people who come in with views that are unpopular. The way to get the right intelligence is to confront one set of views with another set of views. And Bolton's behavior, if it is correct, as alleged, is not acceptable. That's the way to really skew the intelligence, so that the intelligence analysts only give you what they think you want. I don't know whether that was the case or not. We'll have to see in the hearings tomorrow. But if true, that is a cardinal sin in terms of intelligence and politics in Washington.
Well, we're clearly going to hear more on that front. I want to begin to bring our callers in. They've been waiting patiently. Stephen is calling from Chesapeake, Virginia. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
I just want to say I agree wholeheartedly with what Bolton thinks about the UN, and I agree with pretty much everything your guests have said. I think the UN has been used by dictators to, get power that they don't have. And if the U.S. is paying, a good portion of the bills, they should use it for their, we should use it for our own interests. I think if he gets in there, yeah, he should, like one of your guests said, he should, elevate what is good, what the U.N. does well. But you know, use it for what we want. There's so much bureaucracy. There's so many dictators doing it for what they want.
Stephen, I think we've got it. We appreciate your call. Joe and I, what about this perspective? And, you know, it's very much in the land these days, a kind of a let's get real. The UN's really nothing but a sort of a talking shop that elevates, lousy governments above their status. And it's really all about superpower power. That's ours. So let's get real. What do you say to that?
Well, sometimes yes, but sometimes no. Remember that George H.W. Bush was able to get the UN to create a broad coalition which expelled Saddam Hussein from Kuwait. It's also worth noticing things where the UN has played an important role, for example, in following up on peacekeeping operations where we don't want to be there forever, but where it's very important that somebody prevents the killing from going on. Take countries like Sierra Leone, where the British went in, but then the UN took over. The UN does some things well, does some things badly. But a lot of our job is to try to make it work better. So in that sense, if Bolton makes it work better, good. But the question is, does he have the temperament to do that? I think remains an open question.
When he says, you heard John Fund say, well, it's good, UNICEF is good, public health things are good. What a world in which the UN was simply doing that kind of infrastructure and nobody wore a blue helmet, no one picked up a rifle for the UN, be a better place?
Well, the question is, does the United States want to be putting troops in those places? Do we want local dictators putting troops in those places? I think in very many instances, the UN peacekeeping operations are actually in American interests.
So don't wipe them all away. Dan's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Dan, you're on the air.
Hello. I think the Nixon in China analogy is rather weak. I think sending John Bolton to the UN would be like sending Michael Moore to a secret planning meeting at the Pentagon.
because he's a polemicist who, wants to blow it up.
He is precisely the wrong man for that particular job. He clearly would be very destructive of the very purpose of the UN, which is consensual and democratic in spirit. The notion that the UN is only relevant to the extent that it serves American interests is the height of arrogance, in my opinion. It shows no sense of the idea of the family of nations. Something that hasn't existed yet, but something that had better develop if we're to avoid catastrophe in our shrunken and overpopulated world.
Dan, we've got it, and thank you for your call. John, there's the other view, just the polar opposite of the Bolton impulse, the sort of family of nations that we need to work toward here as a democratic, consensual family of nations, I guess. Does that go by the by? I mean, you're taking this rather... You sound pretty unflappable tonight about it, but do we have an American drift here that just really sidelines a central impulse of the United Nations?
Well, I mean, the reason I wrote a book entitled Soft Power was to say that when you think only of using your military power and acting as a bully, you're failing to use one of the tools in your arsenal, which is the ability to get what you want by attraction rather than coercion. And Bolton has shown himself to be a man who doesn't understand soft power. I don't know whether the metaphor your caller just used was a rather delightful and amusing one. Whether it's fair or not, I don't know.
You mean Michael Moore at the Pentagon
Michael
equivalent.
Moore at the Pentagon, but I do agree with him that I don't think Bolton has the temperament to be as able at wielding soft power in the UN as his predecessors, for example, Jack Danforth or John Negroponte.
Let's take him at his own words for a moment. Imagine that he gets there and his real agenda is a kind of dismantling. How effective or how impactful can a United States ambassador to the UN be in changing its very structure, in maybe diminishing the UN? Would he have the power or the place to do it?
Well, I mean, what he may do is have a wrecking influence in the sense that he can feed impulses in the Congress, which would cut back on funding or try to pull the U.S. out of various U.N. agencies. For example, at times we have pulled out of organizations like UNESCO. During much of the 1990s, we refused to pay our U.N. dues.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that Bolton could, not single-handedly, but working with allies on Hill, be able to do some wrecking.
Eileen is calling from Cedarburg, Wisconsin. Hi, Eileen, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. I wanted to first say that your gentleman from the Wall Street Journal, I think it was him, kept saying that if he was nominated, he would be heading up the UN. Well, that's not what he'd be doing. He'd be an ambassador to the UN, just like any other country sends an ambassador to the UN. He wouldn't be heading up the UN. And I think that kind of shows the arrogance that this country has towards the UN. And Dan basically said it already, that it's there just for whatever we want it to do. Well, no, it's not. It's an international body of people, and it's there for the greater good of the whole world, not for the United States.
Eileen, what about the view John Bolton and others have put out there that, look, let's be real. The United States has the major power is the major power behind the UN, and let's not pretend otherwise.
And all the more so that we should be thinking about the rest of the world. I think the fact that we have been putting up more money and we're the biggest superpower is the most dangerous position that we could ever put ourselves in. And we're becoming these megalomaniacs that we have the right to do basically whatever we want, pollute the earth and, you know, basically rape and pillage this whole entire world. I'm really sick and tired of it. And it shows a lot of arrogance. And, you know, I think Eleanor Roosevelt is rolling over in her grave right now.
Eileen, we've got the perspective. Thank you for your call. Joe Nye, what about this issue of U.S. interest? You've spoken and written powerfully about soft power. But the message put forward here from the kind of Bolton camp seems to be, let's not get too caught up in that. It tends to cloud issues instead of bringing clarity. Let's be more upfront about material American power and not get bogged down.
Well, every country in the UN pursues its national interest, and it uses the UN to pursue its interest. But the big question is, do you define your interests broadly or narrowly? If you define them too narrowly, what's good for us only, then you're bound to create enemies, you're bound to create coalitions against you. If you define your interests in a broad and far-sighted way, which includes the interests of others, you can develop coalitions and you can get things done. Let me take you back to George H.W. Bush and the first Gulf War and how effective he was. He called something like 62 heads of state during the month of August of 1990 and was able then to organize outside the U.N., a coalition which was within the UN so that people voted the right way when they instructed their ambassadors, and it was very effective. It served American interests, but it served the interests of a lot of other countries as well, not the least of which was Kuwait. So again, you know, Bolton is correct when he says we should pursue our interests. The question is how we do it, and my worry about him is that he thinks of it in very narrow terms.
Joe Nye, John Bolton was saying today, we just got a minute here, but was saying today that he'd just spoken with Kofi Annan and was getting a warm welcome there. It appears that in all likelihood he will be appointed U.S. ambassador to the U.N. How do you think Kofi Annan and the rest of the U.N., the other members, will receive him?
Well, I think they have no choice. I mean, he represents, or will represent, if confirmed, the country which provides the largest proportion of the U.N. budget, the country which is the world's only military superpower, and he is President Bush's representative. And those other countries and the Secretary General will have to take him seriously. What we have to hope is that Bolton will reach out on his part to take them seriously as well.
Could you see the UN after another, let's say, 3 years of John Bolton or four as a diminished institution? Do you think that would be welcomed by the by the Bush administration?
It might turn out diminished, but it might also turn out improved. There are indeed reforms that can be taken in terms of the secretariat and the bureaucracy. It would be nice to see some of the reforms that Kofi Annan has suggested in his recent report based on a high-level panel in which the American representative was General Brent Scowcroft. Many of those reforms make good sense, and it would be nice if Bolton would get behind them.
Joseph Nye, professor of international relations at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, author of Soft Power and the Power Game. Joe, it's wonderful to have you with us tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to be with you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, a different perspective on John Bolton. This is On Point. John Bolton answered some tough questions today on Capitol Hill, but there was one question that was left off the table, and, well, we think it still needs to be asked. John, what's up with that mustache? The contrast between Mr. Bolton's dark hair and snow-white mustache is eye-catching, a kind of inexplicable visual trademark. For a little clarity on this, we turn to On Point's unofficial hair consultant, Connie Sullivan, owner of the Genesis Salon in Newton, Massachusetts. Last time we spoke with Connie, she was styling John Kerry's hair in the locks of all the party bigwigs at the Democratic National Convention. Connie, thanks a lot for being with us again.
Thank you.
So, what do you make of what we all see? Here's John Bolton with his very prominent, upfront, and big mustache. It's white. His hair is not. Important matters of state today, and yet all America's asking, what's up with that? Is that naturally possible?
I think so, because we've seen it in so many men that their beard and mustache actually turn white before their hair.
So it doesn't mean that there's a Grecian formula going on here or just five-minute color?
I don't think so. I watched him tonight on the news, and there's plenty of gray going through his hair. But what I think is that because there's such a contrast, what's underneath the mustache, I think that if he would remove the mustache, that he not only would look younger, but what is underneath it? It's unbelievable because I was trying to... I was trying to sort of look at his teeth or something, and we can't even see anything except the mustache.
Oh, you think he may be hiding something under that great white mustache?
It could be, but I think he would look younger, certainly, if he removed it.
Well, but it makes a kind of a statement. I mean, it's very in-your-face a little bit, brings Teddy Roosevelt to mind, but it's right out there. This is a man who's not afraid to have a big white mustache.
He may not be afraid to have it, but it isn't appealing to anybody, certainly not myself, and I'm sure maybe more than half of the people that have viewed him. But I honestly think that he could look younger and more appealing and maybe more believable. Who knows?
Do you think he'd look more diplomatic, Connie?
Definitely. A little shorter hair and remove that mustache. God, remove it.
Well, a little salon tip for John Bolton. Somehow I don't think he'll take the advice, but we appreciate your filling us in. Connie, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Connie Sullivan, owner of the Genesis Salon in Newton, Massachusetts. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jupp, Eileen Amata, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Tim Skoog, Michael Garth, and Angel Coselli. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.